Mistress of Brown Furrows by Susan Barry. Part of the Romance by Ida Pollock Collection. Narrated by Catherine Moran for Saga Egmont. Chapter 1.
Well, goodbye, old thing. I hope you'll enjoy the halls. Sorry I couldn't wait to see him, but I expect he'll turn up any moment now.
Carol Inglis waved goodbye automatically as the last of her friends was whirled away down the Avenue of Limes. The big shining car was the very last word in ostentatious elegance, and Janet Aintree, waving farewell out of the rear window, looked as smugly self-satisfied as her parents, seated one on either side of her, behind their well-dressed chauffeur. Janet was wearing the daring little hat and the jauntily cut suit she had bought when she went shopping with Mademoiselle the previous week, and she was flaunting her new bright red lipstick. That she was leaving Selborne for good meant, apparently, very little to her, and there was certainly no thought of tears in her heart, for she was going to a far more exciting life than anything she had known within the high protecting walls of the old abbey. Her father had recently been appointed physician in ordinary to the ruler of some attractive-sounding country tucked away on the borders of Europe and Asia, and she was looking forward to an exciting whirl of shopping and theatres and other unaccustomed treats before tasting the ultimate and exquisite joy of being actually flown to her romantic destination. Janet was riding the crest of a wave, and her handkerchief had ceased to flutter, and she had dropped down onto the seat between her parents long ere the first bend in the winding drive took her out of sight of the pillared front door. And her only thought, as she shot between the gates for the last time, was that life, with a capital L, was now actually beginning. Behind her, however, Carol stood forlornly beside her piled-up suitcases, and wondered at the silence which hung over everything. Not a heavy, brooding silence, but a rather wistful, regretful silence, like the first breath of autumn mist when it steals unexpectedly across a still, flowering landscape. The deserted playing fields, where yesterday voices had laughed and called to other laughing voices. The empty lawns, so recently thronged with gay summer dresses and flanneled forms of fathers, brothers and guardians, were utterly quiet now and still. The old grey building behind her, which had stood thus for centuries, with its great echoing hall in which Miss Hardcastle had made her end-of-term speech and awarded the prizes, was like an empty grey shell in the slumbering countryside. And even from the servants' quarters at the back of the house, there was no customary hum of activity, for, with the departure of all the mistresses, save Miss Hardcastle, who was to enjoy a holiday in the south of France and was at the moment upstairs in her room engaged with packing, the staff had dwindled to a mere couple of caretakers. Carol felt suddenly appallingly lonely as she stood there in the late afternoon sunshine and waited for someone to come and collect her. Despite the warmth, she was a little cold inside, although her hands were moist inside her immaculate gloves, and her throat was dry and hurt a little. She kept shifting uneasily from one neatly shod foot to the other, and a small, anxious voice inside her kept crying with the persistence of a babe in the wilderness. What if he doesn't come? What if he doesn't come? If only a taxi would make its appearance round the bend in the drive. If only Timothy R. Carrington would arrive to collect his ward. It seemed so much worse now that all the others had gone, so many of them borne away from Selborne for good. Janet Aintree was on her way to a new life, like at least a dozen other girls for whom this closing summer term had been like a signpost pointing away to the future. Youth behind, maturity ahead.